are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Brian Peacock here with you once again. This Tuesday episode of the show, I'm excited to be talking to Matt Williamson, who's the host of Locked On NFL. He's a former NFL scout, so we're going to get into some draft stuff. He's also a dynasty and fantasy football guru, so we got to touch on some of that, especially how it relates to the 49ers. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, rate and review on iTunes. We're on Spotify, Google Play. You can find this podcast everywhere. If you want to contact me, find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can email the show. Any questions or comments, lockedon49ers@gmail.com. And now let's bring on today's guest. All right, here we are, another Locked On Podcast Network crossover episode. Brian Peacock here of Locked On 49ers. I am with Matt Williamson. He is the host of Locked On NFL. He also does the Dynasty Blueprint podcast, which I love. Former NFL scout. Matt, thanks for joining me today. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing awesome. It's been a fun off season. I'm expecting a child that's due very soon here, so that's an extra bit that's going on alongside. Yeah, thank you. So gearing up for that, doing these daily pods. Having a good
that
time.
That shouldn't create any problem early in the football season.
No, I shouldn't have any problem doing a daily podcast either, right?
Right.
So for my list.
Is this your first?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, it's a game changer.
I know. I'm kind of prepared and unprepared at the same time, which I guess is standard.
Prepared.
Yeah, exactly. So for my listeners who don't know, can you talk a little, just real quick about your life as a scout? You started off in college as a scout, right? University of Pittsburgh, is that where you started, then ended up with the Browns?
Yeah. My professional career, since I've been doing this professionally, I haven't had a, quote, real job in, like, 15, 16, I guess close to like 18 years.
Living the dream.
I was a recruiting assistant at Pitt. I'm from Pittsburgh. I live in Pittsburgh for 3 years. So that was Antonio Bryant's last year and both of Larry Fitzgerald's years. So I helped recruit Larry. I left Pitt when Larry left Pitt. So that draft class. I went to Akron as the director of football operations there, but only lasted about 9 months or so because while I was at Akron, one of the jobs that I had done, you know, as a new staff was kind of build a relationship with the Browns because they were right down the street. It's only like a half hour away for people that don't know. And they got in touch with me and they're like, well, a lot of, you know a bunch of people, Matt. Do you know anyone that would be interested in a scouting position? We're looking to hire a guy. And I'm like, yeah, me. You know, so I went and interviewed with the Browns, got the job. I beat like 40 or 50 people for it, which, you know, that was, you know, a prestigious job, obviously, in being in the league. And we proceeded to go 2-14 and get fired, as is often the case. But Butch Davis was the head coach. To give people a frame of reference, I got hired when Kellen Winslow got drafted, right the day after. And I got let go and was part of the war room that drafted Braylon Edwards. So my Pittsburgh fans, as I tell, it was Ben Roethlisberger's rookie year. So my hometown Steelers were 15-1. We were 2-14. And when I got let go, I got hooked on to ESPN through Scouts Inc. at the time. And I was at ESPN for 10 years. Really long stretch there. That was great. I mean, 10 solid years of an NFL analyst. And they had all kinds of cuts, as everybody knows. And I was one of those people whose contract wasn't renewed. And I've been doing Locked On NFL ever since and a bunch of stuff around the web and finally got tired of doing writing for so many websites. I started my own a couple months ago, williamsonfootball.com. And I also have a pretty prominent role with Steelers Nation Radio. So I've been at their mini camps or their OTAs broadcasting, and I'll be at mini camps and up at training camp and all that good stuff too.
So that Braylon Edwards draft, that was 2005, right? That was the Alex Smith, Aaron Rodgers draft, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely. We had the third pick in the draft that year.
Okay, and so was there any quarterback talk in your war room? I don't know how detailed you could get in any of this. Was there an Alex Smith versus Aaron Rodgers conversation?
Kind of, and the Browns collectively, and myself included, had Rodgers ahead of Smith. So, you know, but neither were in the top three for us. And Braylon was our number one overall player. And we had just brought in Jeff Garcia I know it doesn't sound like much of a stopgap, and it wasn't. We probably should have been in the market for a quarterback. And the year before, they drafted Luke McCown, who they were really excited about as a long-term guy. So they probably should have been in the market, but Braylon, they thought, and myself included, was the number one player in the whole draft, and to get him at three, they were pretty happy.
So let's keep with the draft theme here and talk about the 49ers draft in 2018. How did you see this draft from a 49ers perspective? They sort of created a new hole by having this trade that was obviously was in place before the draft, and then they were able to draft Mike McGlinchey at number nine, traded Trent Brown to the New England Patriots. How do you feel about that long term? Is that an upgrade at tackle for the 49ers and the rest of the draft for San Francisco?
I like Brown a lot, and I think he's a high quality player. But I think the key here, and this has really been reflective over the last 2 years, is everything is being built in the Shanahan mold. You know, and Shanahan, through Kubiak and his dad, wants lighter on their feet, agile, active linemen. And that's not Brown. I mean, he's 360 pounds or whatever, and he's agile for 360, but not agile for a Shanahan tackle.
Right.
And so I thought they overdrafted McGlinchey a little, but tackles don't grow on trees, and he can maybe be the successor at left tackle before long, although I think Staley's playing well and isn't going anywhere. So I think it made sense, you know, that just getting a long-term starting tackle, hopefully, in your mold is very valuable.
I totally agree. And at the time I was thinking, yeah, maybe someone that I thought would be ranked in the 20s just on, you know, just the prospect that McGlinchey was. And then you're like, okay, he's the best tackle in the draft. Great scheme fit for what the 49ers are doing. And then you see sort of that upside where, okay, he can move that well for someone who's 6'8", long arms, fits the athletic prototype, even though he was a better run blocker than pass blocker. But there was just some, there might be just a few minor things he could fix up and be really a great pass blocker as well. And then all of a sudden you have, oh yeah, okay, if he's a franchise left tackle, that's a no doubt top 10 pick.
Yeah, and more so than in some schemes, the ability to be a great run blocker, particularly in that zone scheme and on the move, is highly, highly important to them. And I don't know, they probably would never tell you this, but I do think if there would have been a premium edge pass rusher there, they would have went that direction. Or maybe if there had been a true number one wide receiver, they would have gone that direction. But there wasn't. So, you know, take a tackle that's hard to find.
Right, yeah, and I tend to agree there on both those counts. I think it was, you know, Bradley Chubb, off. He's there. I bet he's the pick, no doubt, at sure. number nine. But, yeah, McGlinchey's the guy there, and he's going to be the starting right tackle. From day one, he's the starting right tackle for the 49ers. So that is set. They continued on offense, and actually, I want to talk a little bit about the fantasy impact of this and the dynasty stuff as well. You got Dante Pettis, who, again, like McGlinchey, might have been someone who, if you looked at sort of the national media and the rankings, might have been overdrafted slightly at where he was selected, moving up in round two to take him. How do you see Dante Pettis in the NFL?
Yeah, and I like him. I think he's going to be a versatile guy. Some people I respect really have him highly rated. I think he's going to be a very good returner. Could probably play outside and the slot. Good with the ball in his hands, good ball skills. There's a lot to like. However, I mentioned that number one receiver thing. I think that can't be overlooked, particularly in the fantasy dynasty world, because the Shanahan system has taught us that daddy, you know, Brandon Marshall, Andre Johnson, Julio Jones. I mean, look at the Kubiak Shanahan top wide receivers. And I understand that those guys don't grow on trees, but it wouldn't surprise me at all of whoever the number one wide receiver is on the market, free agents ends up in San Francisco, or they trade up in the first round and grab one of these stud, you know, receivers coming out. So I think Garcon is your number one for now, but I think that piece of the puzzle hasn't been built because we can't build it all at one time. You know, I mean, Lynch and Shanahan only took over a little bit ago on a roster that needed everything, and they just haven't landed their true number one yet. But I think that'll be a priority next offseason.
We've got a Locked On NFL, Locked On 49ers crossover podcast. Matt Williamson, former NFL scout. He is the host of Locked On NFL and also the host of Dynasty Blueprint. So we want to continue talking about a little bit of fantasy stuff, especially as it relates to the 49ers right now, and also get into the NFC West a little bit later in this conversation. Okay, so looking at the long-term dynasty impact here, and you got Pierre Garcon. If you're in a redraft league, I think that's sort of a pick that could be very valuable, and he's not going to go along. You know, he's not going to go with the Julio Joneses of the world. He's going to go later, and you have the potential Kyle Shanahan number one wide receiver with a very good quarterback now in Jimmy Garoppolo. I think he's a player that a lot of people could potentially steal in fantasy drafts.
I do too. I think he'll get a lot of targets. Will be in a good offense. I don't know that he's the long term answer, but he's going to be your pseudo number one and get peppered with targets, as Julio did, as Andre did, but not to that degree, obviously.
Right. And so Dante Pettis, he's probably the backup. It looks like he's working at multiple positions in the offense, so he might be the first backup for Garcon or for Marquise Goodwin or in the slot for Trent Taylor. But right now he's kind of the number four coming in as a rookie wide receiver. He was the fourth wide receiver drafted in the NFL draft. I got to imagine he's going to go much later than that as far as wide receivers are ranked in Dynasty fantasy rankings.
In that mold, I'm pulling mine up now, and in the Dynasty world, my wide receiver ranks go DJ Moore, Christian Kirk, Calvin Ridley, and then a little bit of a gap, Cortland Sutton, Anthony Miller, James Washington, Michael Gallup, Antonio Callaway, who's a really, really talented guy from the Browns that only fell because of, you know, off-the-field issues, and then Pettis. So in rookie drafts, he's pretty much going like the middle of the second round in a 12-team draft.
Okay, top 10 wide receiver, but not quite as high as his draft status was.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think that it's hard to envision him being a highly targeted guy, especially if they do add another prominent guy there a year from now.
Right, that's kind
of... That was my logic behind it, yeah.
That makes sense, because and I totally agree with what you said a minute ago about Pierre Garcon. Right now, he's the number one, but he's got some big escalators in his contract, and he's, you know, not the youngest guy. He's on the wrong side of 30. He's probably not the long-term guy. So if he leaves and then they add another player, might end up being the number one ahead of, say, Dante Pettis, who might be, it would look like that he would be next in line, but maybe he's not and stays in more of a number two role, returner role, which could be very valuable for the 49ers, but you're looking long-term fantasy, still might not be that number one guy.
Yeah, I think that's well said.
One more guy that I think is going to make a fantasy impact here, and I don't know where... I think he should be ranked on the fantasy world, but man, he could be huge both as a receiver and a runner, and that's Jerick McKinnon. If he's the number one guy, I mean, can he have the same impact as some of the running backs had in Atlanta for Kyle Shanahan?
I think the key here is he's an excellent receiver, and he's an ascending player. I mean, for people that don't know, and I don't know, I assume your listeners do, but maybe not all mine do on a national scale, McKinnon was a quarterback in college, you know, a small school quarterback, running quarterback, who lit up the combine and is an explosive, supreme athlete and hasn't had a lot of tread taken off his tires yet because he's been sharing the backfield. And I think he keeps getting better and better and better. And you go back to what Shanahan wants from the position, and this was very, very clear in his time in Atlanta. He wants to be able to detach this guy. He wants to throw many targets his way. And money talks. You know, they gave him, the second or third highest paid running back in the league?
Yeah.
They're going to use him like crazy, and I think he's going to produce really, really well.
Yeah, and his teammate at Georgia Southern, who was a freshman, I think, when Jerick McKinnon was a senior, is Matt Breida, who's also now a 49er, who's going to be his backup. So you've got that Georgia Southern backfield working for you, both 4-3 guys, and I think that's one of the clear things we've seen with Kyle Shanahan. He likes athleticism, whether it's an offensive tackle, running back, wide receiver. These guys are all supreme athletes that he's bringing in.
Absolutely, and he also, going back to Atlanta, doesn't mind at all featuring two guys, you know, and using them on the field together and in a variety of ways. Quick question for you, though, being closer to the Niners than I am. I'm not ready to dismiss Joe Williams either. I mean, just this time last year, the world was buzzing about the guy. And is he come and gone?
No, and talking about dynasty drafts, Joe Williams was sort of a darling of dynasty drafts, thinking, okay, this is the next Shanahan back. And he got hurt, kind of ended up with sort of a red shirt year. There's still questions whether, was it work ethic stuff or was it just straight up the injury? Because some people thought maybe the injury wasn't bad enough that he would miss a full season, but he pretty much got a red shirt year. And there were some red flags with him about his passion for the game coming out of college. And so, but you know, he fits the profile athletically, and Kyle Shanahan had a lot of good things to say about him this offseason coming into OTAs and things. Okay. And so, he's definitely not out of the picture. He could be, it's just very volatile stock right now. If you can buy Joe Williams very low, I think that's a fantastic way to go in dynasty leagues, because, or even redraft leagues, you know, put him in that waiver watch list. But he's got the skills, and Kyle Shanahan liked him enough that they traded up to get him in the draft, and he said he wouldn't have been able to sleep at night if they didn't draft Joe Williams. That's how much he liked him coming into the draft in 2017. And so he could go anywhere from being, you know, splitting time with Jerick McKinnon this year, potentially being the starter above Jerick McKinnon if it turns out that contract is too much for McKinnon in a couple years, or Joe Williams could be cut by the end of training camp this year. So that could go in a lot of different directions right now. That's completely up in the air, but I definitely would not count him out.
I think he's the better. I like Breida, but I think Williams is the better running back.
Yeah, he's the better talent. Breida is a little smaller, more of a scat back, but Breida looked really good coming down the stretch last season. I mean,
he did.
Part of that is the Garoppolo effect. Everybody, both sides of the ball, people were
rises all ships.
Yeah, people were punting and kicking better when Jimmy Garoppolo showed up. It was the weirdest thing. Like, the offensive line blocked better because he got the ball out quicker. The defense got the ball back to the offense more often. It was pretty insane how dramatic that flip was when Jimmy Garoppolo showed up. So, and Matt Breida was one of those guys who looked really great down the stretch, and a lot of people thought maybe he'd just be the number one guy coming into this season before they signed Jerick McKinnon.
Yeah, a very interesting situation, and they do have a couple. You know, we'll see who all emerges.
Absolutely, yeah, it's going to be fun to watch those guys compete, and a lot of speed in that backfield. So there's not like,
yeah, for sure,
it's not like where you need a thumper and a speed guy, because they're all speed guys.
Right, they all can catch.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's absolutely huge. And Jerick McKinnon's a really good pass blocker too, which is why I think that was probably one of the things that Kyle Shanahan liked about him most.
Yeah, and he has a toughness about him that your fans are going to like.
Right, and he's short, but he's not necessarily undersized. He's one of those guys where it's like he's powerful, he's built, and so he might not look like the biggest back, but he's not necessarily a scat back either.
Absolutely, but he can play the role of a scat back, which I think they like.
Yeah, you bet. You're listening to Locked On Podcast Network. Remember to listen to our daily national show hosted by my guest today, Mr. Matt Williamson, Locked On NFL. And this is part of the number one local daily sports podcast network. Okay, we got to get on to the NFC West here and now sort of reshuffle this deck with the NFC West. And I'm interested to hear from you, someone who really follows every team in the league closely, your perspective on where the NFC West is. My guest yesterday was Grant Goldberg of Locked On Seahawks. And then I had Brad Motter on last week of Locked On Rams. So we've been talking about some of these rosters and how things have changed for the NFC West coming in. The 49ers obviously are building this thing. They didn't go all in and add a bunch of free agents and try to necessarily go into win now mode like the Rams have. I think you have to expect on paper that the Rams are going to be the number one team in this division. But the Seahawks retooling, partially rebuilding. There's still, you know, Earl Thomas holdout. He's still involved in trade rumors and stuff. So how does this stack up for you? Where are the 49ers? Did they gain enough ground on the Seahawks and the rest of the division to be competing for one of these playoff spots at the end of the year?
Yes and no. I mean, I think we can't have this conversation without saying the NFC is so ridiculously loaded right now. You know, that even if the Niners play like a playoff team, come in second in their division, they still may be a game or two behind in the wild card race. I mean, just because there's so many good teams in this conference. If the Niners were in the AFC, I would absolutely pick them as a playoff team. Now, I don't know that I will. As for them versus Seattle, I know that's been a long time rivalry and it's come and gone, but I think they're well past Seattle now. You know, I think these teams are going in opposite directions. With all respect to Russell Wilson, I do think they're absolutely rebuilding, even if they don't say so. And they got a handful of star players still, but they need a lot. And, you know, they've shipped out a lot of very good football players. Where the Niners are building slowly. You know, well, they're building fast, but they're not going all in. You know, like, they're smart with their contracts in that, you know, they're front-loading a lot of them, too, so that they can keep buying in free agency year after year. It's an improving, ascending team. You know, you look at the bar graph and it's going, or you look at the trajectory on the graph and it's going up and up and up, and it continued to will. I still think they're behind the Rams, who clearly are in it to win it this year. I mean, you talk about star power and the best offense in the league last year. Now this was a defensive offseason. I don't know that the Rams are the best team in the league, but I think they're in the conversation. And I will pick them to win the division. And I like Arizona. And I think Rosen will be a star. And getting David Johnson back can't be forgotten about. I mean, he's a monster, and it's a good defense. So I think they're better than most people realize. Like, I think their over-under win total's like 5. I think they're more like a 7 or 8 win type of team. But I don't think they're a contender.
I think that's
I don't
great.
Think Seattle's a contender either.
Yeah, where do you see Seattle? Do you think they're going to be a team that really has a wake-up call here and has to be like, okay, we might have to completely rebuild this thing? I mean, they still have the coach and the quarterback in place.
You think? I mean, they got new coordinators. They really got rid of a ton of foundation pieces, and Earl Thomas still could go. I look at Seattle as like a 5-6 win team this year.
Okay, wow. Yeah, so that's...
I don't think they're a contender.
And that would be huge for, obviously, the 49ers, helping them leapfrog some teams, you know, with them also coming down as the 49ers right. are ascending there. You mentioned Josh
Rosen. Balance power has changed in that division.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Josh Rosen, and I thought that was sort of one of the low-key best picks in the draft for them to be able to move up, and they gave up, what, like a 3rd and a 5th or something? It wasn't like one of these things.
Very little to go get a franchise quarterback.
To go get a franchise quarterback, who he was the 4th quarterback off the board. To me, he was better than the 4th quarterback available, too. So I thought that was...
He was my 2nd, actually.
Your number 2? Who was your number 1?
Lamar Jackson, which I know I'm kind of on an island on.
Okay.
But, he was, you know, so I know that most people did not have Lamar Jackson as their number 1, but of the guys that went in the first half of the draft, Rosen would have been my first pick of that group. And if you look at what Arizona, you know, has done at that position, they signed Glennon, they signed Bradford. I mean, they're looking for a pocket passer. And to me, Rosen was the most pocket passer-ish of all of them, too.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And probably the closest to being ready to jump in and play.
Absolutely.
And even though Baker Mayfield, actually, I kind of want to get into this a little bit with you, the quarterbacks. So Baker Mayfield was, you know, the senior, the redshirt senior, had an extra year from transferring. So he was, what, at least 2 years older than most of these guys. And so when I was looking at these quarterbacks, obviously Baker Mayfield was the better college player. He was awesome. And I get all the love for Baker Mayfield. I liked him a lot more. When I thought, oh, man, look at this guy. He's a little bit too short. He's going to be a steal at the top of the 2nd round. And then it was like, right. Oh, wow, okay, he's just going to go number 1 overall. And like, I'm not totally against that pick or anything. But if you look at it through the angle that he's 2 years older than all of these guys, imagine how good Lamar Jackson would be 2 years from now still playing college ball, right? Or Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold.
Right. That's humongous. You know, yeah, I mean, look how much those guys have improved. Darnold turned 21 the other day. You know, I mean... There's a lot more football in front of those guys. And for some of those reasons, Mayfield was my 4th-ranked quarterback. I liked him more than Allen, but I like Darnold and Rosen and Jackson more, obviously. It shocks me that he's even really in the conversation for first overall. And I'm not saying he's a bust or he's not going to be a good player, but first overall pick? You know what I mean? Yeah. What were we talking about Mayfield this time last year? Like you said, nice day 2 guy. Maybe he can come in and beat Case Keenum.
Right, yeah, and everybody he was getting compared to were people that were picked late and overachieved. He was getting Jeff Garcia comparisons, you know, a lot of the Manziel stuff.
Right.
But, yeah, so he's the oldest guy.
He's not Drew Brees.
No, exactly. He was getting those, and it was like, well, you got to slow down on that. And so, and actually, I heard a story about Drew Brees a long time ago. This is like an old-time rumor. I can't even find an article online that confirms this, but... At the time, I was right when I was first starting to follow the draft, I remember Drew Brees was a guy that Bill Walsh, and he was still around in charge of the 49ers, and he wanted Drew Brees to come out early in the draft, and he was going to select him number 3 overall. Drew Brees stayed at Purdue, and then that was the draft where, that was the LeVar Arrington draft, and then the 49ers were at 3. They ended up trading down and taking Julian Peterson, Ahmed Plummer, and a few other guys, but the rumor I heard was that
The Michael Vick first overall year.
Yes, yes. And, no, it was the year after, right? Wait.
No, because San Diego ended up with Tomlinson and Brees. And I think, and they...
Yes.
Yeah. And that was the Vick year.
So the year before that was the year that Bill Walsh wanted him to come out early so he could take him number 3. And I can't find any substantial... stuff about that. But this is back at the time. This isn't like a hindsight rumor that I heard later. This is like something I remember at the time being like, okay, this is the guy that Bill Walsh loves. And when I heard that, I started really watching Drew Brees when he was a senior the next year. And I was kind of blown away. And he's obviously not tall, but I was blown away that he fell to the 2nd round. And it was like, this guy's a really good quarterback. And he's like, has everything you look for. And then sort of another a feather in Bill Walsh's cap that he was right about Drew Brees, even though he didn't have a chance to draft him after all, if that story is true.
That's funny, because I didn't think we'd go down this alley, obviously, with the 49er podcast, and I had never heard that story till just right now. But as the second you said it, I said, oh, I bet Walsh would have loved Brees.
Absolutely.
You know, and here's why. I mean, your fan base knows this, but what did Coach Walsh preach more than anything was accuracy, you know, knowing where to go with the football, Montana-esque
anticipation.
Type of, you know, anticipation, deadly accuracy. Like, that it needs to be 6 inches in front of the numbers, not eight, not 12. You know, like, this is where the ball needs to be. Brees is probably the most accurate passer I've ever seen. And even more so, Coach Walsh used to say, I could lay on the ground and just watch Montana's feet or any quarterback's feet, and I'll tell you how accurate a passer he is. And people don't know this about Brees, and this is actually something Mayfield shares with him, but Brees was an exceptional tennis player. And what is tennis player all about? Keeping your great footwork, almost like a quarterback. I think he beat someone who's – someone Google this for me. Drew Brees beat one of the best tennis players of all time when they were in college or high school or something like that. Like, he was a great, great player, and I bet Walsh would have adored him.
Yeah, and so that rumor makes more sense when you look at it under that lens. It's like, oh, yeah, Brees would have been that perfect West Coast offense, Bill Walsh type of quarterback. And you mentioned tennis. Josh Rosen, also a stud tennis player, right?
Was he? Okay.
Yeah, he was a stud tennis player, so that kind of makes sense. He was
for quarterbacks, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an interesting story. I'm definitely going to go look that up now and see who Brees beat in tennis. That's an awesome story.
Somebody really good. I just don't know anything about tennis, or I know enough.
Yeah, I mean, I can't help there either. Probably wasn't Pete Sampras or something like that. He was too old. But yeah, I think we're out of time here, Matt. That was a really fun conversation. I didn't expect to go down that road, but that was great.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Absolutely.
This was a blast.
Okay, and also, can you tell people where to find that newest venture, your new website?
Yeah, at WilliamsonFootball.com is my site, and I'm at WilliamsonNFL is what is Twitter.
And you can find me on Twitter at BDPeacock. LockedOn49ers.com is the place to find other articles about the 49ers, as well as all the streams of the podcast and where to subscribe. And, of course, both of these podcasts on iTunes, on Spotify. You can find all the Locked On Network podcasts just about everywhere. And also tune into Matt's other podcast, Dynasty Blueprints, a fun one for you fantasy guys.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Thanks again, Matt. Always fun to chat with you. Let's do it again, huh?
Absolutely. This was a blast.
Thanks again to Matt Williamson for joining me on the show. Thanks again to everybody for listening. Be back tomorrow with the Winky Wednesday podcast. Don't forget to keep those mailbag questions coming either via Twitter at BD Peacock. You can find Nick at Bay Area Wink, or email the show LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. And we'll talk to you then right here on Locked On 49ers.